Why isn't it toasting?
Because it's the air conditioning's off and it's hot outside.
Yeah. God, we gotta find a way to do the show with the air conditioning on.
That's your department, sir, not mine.
Welcome to Prefer Not To, a weekly sometime cocktail hour.
Always cocktail hour.
Where Kate and I'm Josh.
I'm Kate.
Get together and have a cocktail and talk about movies and TV and any other bits of cultural flotsam.
And jetsam.
And jetsam.
We
and
did
transom.
That. We did that bit last.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So, Kate, what drink are we having this week?
Josh, we are having pina coladas.
Just get all the jokes out of your system now.
We're having pina coladas, right. And we're talking about stuff.
Yeah. You know, we talked about that
Josh
song
hates
already.
This song.
Well, it's creepy. We've had this discussion about how that song is a Hitchcock movie.
Write to me and escape.
Right. Write to me and I will hunt you down for cheating on me.
If you like making love at midnight.
Then I know where to catch you out on the dunes naked where you don't have any clothes on and I can kill you.
You know, if you don't like the cocktails I choose, you can pick one week.
I'm fine with the cocktail. It's just the song is very creepy.
Speaking of the cocktail, does it taste like a pina colada?
It tastes exactly like every pina colada that I've ever had. So, good work, Kate. Tell us a little bit about the drink.
Well, there's a lot of different recipes for the pina colada. There is a distinct Puerto Rican style versus a Cuban style. The Puerto Rican style uses cream of coconut.
Mm-hmm.
The Cuban style does not, and then there's a lot of other various ones that use coconut liqueur or coconut juice, or they make their own coconut milk or serve it out of a coconut, or, you know, all those different things. My recipe, I was trying to go with coconut liqueur, but apparently that does not exist anywhere in this town, so we did coconut juice instead.
That really kind of surprised me, given how many drinkers and foodies there are in our area.
Well, it really surprised me, but they also had every other kind of fruit or any nut liqueur that you could think of, like amaretto, chocolate, blueberry, banana, like orange, like watermelon, and like all these weird flavors.
Watermelon liqueur?
Yeah, almond, which
I can see almond, because, you know, they have almond milk and it's tasty. You don't like almond milk, though, do you?
No, I don't. But I mean, my point is they literally had everything except for coconut. And the guy at the ABC
really?
Store...
Literally everything?
...was very friendly, but he acted like it was a really weird request.
This is the guy in the store that was carrying the watermelon liqueur, but
yes.
That your essential ingredient to the pina colada. You know, that tells us how far we are since the 1970s that's so exotic.
Do individual ABC stores get to carry what they... choose what they carry? Or is it dictated by the state? Like, if you went to another ABC store in another town, would they
That is a good question. I do not know the answer to that.
Mitchell, this sounds like something you should look up.
Apparently, we have someone in our listening base who knows
these.
The
Uggs.
I know. Yes, because of his research. So, tell us a little bit about
the
pina colada.
So,
the
pina colada was invented most certainly in Puerto Rico. It is the national beverage of Puerto Rico, and National Pina Colada Day is July 10th.
So, in its way, it's an essentially American drink, given that Puerto Rico is America.
No.
It
Why? Was invented by three, or well, there's contentions on the fact it was invented by one of three different people, two of whom worked at the Caribbean Hilton in San Juan in 1952, which was when the Coco Lopez cream was invented, which is the cream that they use. It's like the brand name, like the standard, like your Black Seal. And then there was one at another hotel, also in San Juan, and both places claim ownership of it to this day, so it's just kind of like one of those
God only knows.
Yeah, one of those types of things. The important thing is that it was very popular at the Caribbean Hilton, and that is how it got famous because Rico.
Is that how you say it? Caribe.
Caribe.
I don't know that. Caribe.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Caribe.
We're so uncultured.
I have 60 hours of Spanish credit on my transcript.
That's like 3 days.
No, it's not. It's like 6 years worth.
Okay, I don't know how you kids do it.
It's different at our school. Anyway, the point being that the pina colada was popularized through the Hilton, which was obviously a tourist destination, and that's how it got famous.
I'm gonna challenge you a little bit though on the it's an essentially American drink. Puerto Rico's America.
Oh, I forgot to mention that pina colada means in Spanish strained pineapple. Because it's got pineapple strains in it.
That would do it. Yeah. So you're enjoying the drink?
Oh, sorry. And I also forgot to mention that the pina colada gained even more renown when it was featured on Rupert Holmes' yacht rock classic, Escape.
Parentheses.
The pina colada song. Right. In parentheses.
Right. Which we sang a few bars of, and discussed how I find terrifying. And it, yet again, another tribute to your love of yacht rock.
Yep, love it.
So, and you're enjoying the beverage?
I am. I'm surprised it actually tastes like a pina colada. It should be frothier, I feel like. Mm-hmm. A little bit more. Our ice is not crushed. It's not crushed enough.
And mine has like a peanut hull in it or something.
That might be part of the coconut. Do you need me to get the peanut out for you? Because I think it's part of a coconut.
It's vegetable matter. It's all going the same place.
Put the peanut in the coconut.
No, and now we're going into Harry Nilsson. I knew this was coming. This is not bad. You were on vacation this week.
I was.
Where'd you go to?
I went to the Florida Keys.
So a fitting beverage.
Yeah, I had one in Key West and watched the sunset. I guess it's probably what put it in my head.
Mm-hmm. How was the trip?
It was good. It was not long in the sense of that we drove 16 hours down and about 15 hours back. I guess the winds were with us on the way back. I don't know how that works. Science.
Your car does have sails.
No, I know. I don't know which way the wind would have been coming up.
The trade winds, the pirates.
Yes.
Caught in the doldrums.
I mean, it was a lot of fun.
Those are all the navigation words that I know.
It was really fun. It was relaxing. I got to go to the Ernest Hemingway house, which, mm-hmm. as we've mentioned, my fondness for Mr. Hemingway, mm-hmm. on the podcast before, mm-hmm. and play with all the little kitty cats that have weird toes.
Yes.
And I got horribly sunburned, mm-hmm. so there was that.
Yeah, you use some sort of bizarro off-brand sunscreen.
It was not off-brand. It was like Banana Boat.
But you have like stripes. Boat a brand? What
yes,
is that?
You're not listening to me. Banana Boat and...
like the song? Like the Harry Belafonte song?
Yeah, but it's called Banana Boat. And then Copper Tone and like all of that. What I have said many times now is that it was spray-on sunscreen. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I have stripes because it did not cover fully.
What SPF was this allegedly?
30.
Okay. My attitude on sunscreen is that if it doesn't look like a paint primer, it's not going to work. You have to really look like you're just smearing like Philadelphia cream cheese on you.
As a future patient of skin cancer over here, I'm going to tell you that I am aware of the fact that I know how to put on sunscreen. Mm-hmm. And in fact, this type of sunscreen
would beg to differ.
This type of sunscreen has never failed me before, and it's, mm-hmm. vastly more convenient than slathering on cream.
Well, how convenient is it now?
Don't be a jerk. I have sun poisoning over here.
I've got
like dragon scales on my shoulder and like weeping sores.
You do not have weeping sores.
I will in like a couple of days.
They are moaning dejectedly at best. Ugh, that is revolting. I think we need to put a picture in the show notes.
I mean, I think we should take a picture of my back arm because that's where the stripes really are.
Yeah, but you know what? We're not going to do that because rule 34.
Why?
Because there's going to be somebody who masturbates to the pictures of your fucking scales.
I'm okay with that.
No.
I mean, it's going to happen anyway.
No, it's not going to happen if you don't put a picture of your scaly shoulder up.
Someone out there, and why don't you want them to feel good?
Really? Really? What else did you get up to down there?
I don't know, just drinking. And
I didn't do shit while you were gone, so I gotta hit you up for what you did while I was gone.
Drinking, carousing, played a rousing game of wizard sticks, which you don't seem to comprehend.
I don't, is it like pickup sticks?
There's a lot of card games and, mm-hmm. such, Cards Against Humanity, Munchkin.
Right. Yeah.
Swimming.
Mm-hmm.
You
also didn't know that you could get sunburned from reflections on the water.
Yes, I didn't know that, but I would have been, oh my god. As someone who has a primary care physician for a mother, mm-hmm. she drilled into me the idea of sunscreen, mm-hmm. since the day I was born. I'm not stupid, okay?
I'm not accusing you of being stupid. And you took Band-Aids, so that was good. Nobody else thought to take Band-Aids.
No one did. It's true.
There you go. I haven't been on vacation since the dawn of time. Of course, my whole life is a vacation because I'm unemployable.
All right. Let me just point this out. I was reading in the shade of the porch at the house we were staying at and somehow got sunburned.
I don't know. Maybe it was like a sunbeam carom or something.
Well, apparently it's like a bank off shot. The water. But the point is, I was completely
playing sunbeam horse.
I'm completely in the shade. So maybe I just have really bad luck, or maybe I'm dumb. I don't know.
I don't think you're dumb. And maybe bad luck. Like 80% bad luck. 11% dumb. 9% laws of physics. You're still looking at that thing.
Yeah, because it fascinates me. This is by far, I think, the worst sunburn I've ever had.
Yeah. I've told you this, but I've had one where I was out surf fishing and the tops of my ears got all blistered in edema. And please continue listening to our show, by the way.
And moving on, we're now going to talk about boils.
Boils? Really? No, that says balls. It doesn't say boils.
No, I meant boils, like, you know, like weeping.
Were we going to talk about boils?
No.
I did have a thing on my nose.
No,
while you were
stop.
Gone.
All right, we're going to move on and we're going to talk about
it. No. Did you ever have, you know that when you have like a zit on your nose and you can't tell whether it's going in or it's going out?
Nope.
Are you kidding me? Really?
I've never had that problem.
You've never had a zit on your nose that you like. It felt like it was pointing in or pointing out.
Generally, if you have a zit on your nose, it's pointing out.
Right, but this one was so. It was like so hard, and it felt like there was a Tic Tac in there.
Why didn't you just slice it open?
Because my nose is already ugly. I don't need a big old fucking pirate gash down my nose.
No, I mean, like, you can just take, like, a needle and, like, pop the side.
Well, I did eventually, but it was, like, so down there. Like, that's what I'm telling you. It's, like, it's down in the fucking Earth's mantle of your nose skin.
From the people who brought you detailed discussion about Liam Neeson's penis.
Yes.
Now we are talking about Josh's disgusting zit on his nose.
I think that's because Liam Neeson's penis brings people pleasure.
And my dragon scale shoulders.
Yeah. There's a whole, that's completely different ends of the spectrum. People enjoy Liam Neeson's penis, I'm guessing.
I'm sure they would, maybe.
Janice Dickinson.
Well, yeah.
Evian bottle and whatnot. So we were enjoying our pina coladas so much we forgot to discuss what's actually in a pina colada.
Human skin. No,
That's why we're making them this week.
This particular recipe is 2 parts rum, 1 part coconut liqueur, substituted for us with coconut juice, and 4 parts pineapple juice.
Well, there you
go. Shaken over crushed ice.
Over crushed ice. And again, it's quite tasty, quite summery, quite refreshing. I'm sorry, I'm not even talking into the mic.
It always has to be a white rum.
Fucking racist rums.
Well, I mean.
What happens? I bet there's another cocktail, though. If you do it with a dark rum, I bet it exists as a different cocktail. Like a negra colada.
Well, I have been thinking we should try the Negroni. I don't know if you want to do that or not.
I honestly don't care.
Well, like, I honestly didn't know that Black Russians existed before White Russians, because it seems like you would want to put some kind of milk in there, but...
Well, that's the man trying to keep the Black Russians down.
True. All right.
Okay, so I had a little bit of an explain it to me. We haven't done explain it to me in a while, and I wanted to explain... This is not... I don't know if it's an official explain it to me.
I mean, yeah, it's an explain it to me. Explain it to me.
I don't have the music yet. Explain it to me.
Explain it to you. All right.
Me? Okay, so I think, and let me begin this by saying, what I don't know about ladies and sex is all. However, so I think
when
I have
a man and a woman love each other very much.
Right, they make all sorts of mistakes.
Yep.
So I think basically I have a general sense about women's reaction to penises. See, which is that. Okay, I think like it's about 80%. They're goofy, and then 20% like, ooh, hey, there's a nice Evian bottle. It's not like guys where it's all like, hey, you know, it's a heavy layer of comedy.
I think men find naked ladies funny too.
Not in the way that girls find boobs. I mean, penis is funny. It's not like guys gather around and see boobs. They're like, hee-hee-hee, boobs, hee-hee-hee. But girls with penises, it's just like.
Well, I want to go ahead and counter with the fact that we're...
This is, by the way, horribly broad strokes that I'm painting.
All right, so what's your question, really?
My question is, I think basically I understand that there's a sort of, a sort of comedic infatuation with penises among them. I don't understand, lady, and again, I'm asking you to speak for an entire sex now.
Mm-hmm.
Balls.
What about them?
Like, I have a sample size of 2, so I don't actually know, like, how to critique them. But, like, I don't understand,
Do we need
like,
to invite, like... A doctor on no, like a urologist not, no. to like talk to us about balls.
I don't know, but I'm just like, are they in the way? Are they like, hey, look at those nice balls? I don't understand, like, because frankly, to be honest, I think ladies see more balls than guys do because they're all like down tucked away down there. Most guys they barely see their own.
So you mean like, let's say you're getting to you're in a position where you're seeing a naked man, sexy or not,
right?
And it's just part of the package. Like, literally, that's why they call it the package.
So there's no such thing as sexy balls.
I'm going to have to think about that for a little while.
Yeah, mull that one over. Mull over the sexy balls.
I think maybe if, like, the balls and the penis were disproportionate.
No, that's like cartoon balls, then.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if they were really small balls.
So they can be unsexy
to
balls.
To a regular. That's, I mean, I'm guessing.
So it really, your balls can only take away. The balls can't do anything for you. It can't be like, guy is not really, he's sort of listing to starboard and he's got a little kink in it, but the balls are perfect.
If the balls aren't there, then obviously you're dealing with, a eunuch, so there's that problem.
Right.
But
So if they weren't there, it would be a problem.
I've never been in a sexy situation with a eunuch before.
Really?
No.
I misread you.
Like most things in that region, I would say that... Hair is a factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine so.
But
yeah, that's what you hear people most make jokes about, like hairy balls or stinky balls.
I'm given to understand they can get kind of sweaty and like catch all the gunk.
I guess. If you don't shower and stuff, and you're like a jock or something. I don't know.
I don't know. I just know.
I just like, you know, like guys, like there's pretty much a standard reaction of guys. You know, like you understand that guys like, you know, heterosexual men, guys who are homosexual have their whole other thing. But, you know, like guys, hey, but you like this, it, you know, it's got this shape, it's this way, boobs, I like them this way, and they do this. But like balls, you know.
Well, I think that, first of all, that's, okay, so I'm going to counter with the point that women find butts attractive too.
Right.
And chests.
Right, I'm just saying like there's standard, you know, understandings of erogenous zones that I don't think, I don't understand where the balls fit in.
I don't understand what you're asking.
I don't either.
Like in my head.
Do ladies find some balls sexy?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think
we're gonna get letters. You realize?
Rule 34 again. I'm just saying I've never found testicles particularly
attractive. It's gonna be somebody who Googles dragon scale balls.
I've never found testicles all that attractive. So I don't. But having said that, penises aren't very attractive unless they're you know, ready to go.
Well, right, and I think it's a context thing. But with ladies, it's so much as context, I guess.
Well, I would also say that. I mean, men's nether regions may not be
attractive.
Attractive, but I don't think lady nether regions are either.
These guys are like lady nether regions.
Well, I know, but it's not like if you saw one walking down the street or you saw a
picture.
Well,
first of all, if
like,
I saw one
baby.
Disembodied with legs walking down the street, a la Philip Roth, I'd be somewhat terrified.
Well, no, but that's my point. Is that it's a lot easier to see boobs? They're much more visible than a penis. Or testicles, or lady parts.
Yeah, I guess.
That's why it's like arms are really big and like, you know, boobs and butts because they're like a strong, muscular, evolutionary thing you can look for it. Or hips or butt.
Mm-hmm. Or peacock tail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or horns.
Oh, yeah. I like a lady with some antlers.
Or the size of your bill, if you know what I'm saying.
Give me an old 12-point rack there.
I mean, that's...
Wait. Hey, if you have antlers, you're a boy. Am I gay for deer?
Maybe. I was thinking like sheep, like yaks and sheep that like wrestle and like bighorns, not deer.
Okay.
You see where Josh's mind went.
You're laughing at me. I just don't, it's like a body part that I did not understand where it fit into the erotic calculus.
I don't think it's supposed to be
that. Because clearly can't leave it out, is my point.
I don't think it's supposed to be that erotic. You know, like, the cervix is probably not that erotic. or the hey, baby, you've got the best fallopian tubes
I've but those
ever
aren't,
seen.
Those are interior.
Well, my...
those are, like, crippling self-doubt. You don't see those right off the bat.
Well, I think that, again, it's part of the package. Penises and testicles just kind of go together.
Okay. So it's not... Yeah, so it's, like, part of the whole thing.
I'm guessing. Huh? I don't know.
You're acting like you're not a girl.
If you're... No, I mean, I'm just saying, I'm, my own experience, they're just kind of there.
Okay.
Also, let me tell you this. Cosmo writes an article on testicles almost every single month, and they always say the same thing.
Play with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they say, use your knuckles to...
Ow! No! Okay, ladies.
You didn't even let me finish.
Yeah, ladies. This is very serious. I'm using the serious voice. Your knuckles should not be anywhere near testicles.
You didn't let me finish.
I don't care.
Let me finish.
Does it involve the knuckles being near testicles?
Yes.
Then no.
Okay, so what I was trying to say is that you're supposed to use your knuckles to knead the skin behind the testicles to the anus, frenulum, in order to stimulate the prostate.
Have we discussed this on the show when Cosmo changed?
No.
Okay, so I have this theory. Kate and I have discussed this before, not on the show. So when I was in my 20s and a young newspaper editor, when you're a newspaper editor, there's long periods of not doing anything, then you know, short periods of furious energy getting things done. Okay? So during those long periods of not doing anything, certain habits develop. One of them at one of the newspapers I worked at was sitting around doing the Cosmo quiz. Okay? So I am intimately familiar, at least with mid to late 1990s Cosmo quizzes. And Kate and I have discussed this, and what we found is that when I was reading Cosmo in the 1990s, Okay. Their all-purpose go-to...
I just want to apologize now.
We don't have to do this.
Oh, good.
Their all-purpose go-to sex move was sticking your finger in a guy's butt. Okay? And Kate says that that, in fact, is not the Cosmo all-purpose go-to move anymore. Correct?
I would agree.
Okay. What's their go-to move now?
Their go-to move almost has always something to do with the balls.
See, that is a change. I feel like in a couple hundred years, cultural anthropologists will like start mapping the Cosmo curve from when they talked about sticking your finger up a guy's butt.
I really hope that's not what they're doing in the future. Oh, please, I hope we're on Mars.
You were just in college. They fucking do PhD thesis on video games.
I will say that most of their
gendering cocktails.
Their most of the balls related advice that they give has.
Why is it a Tom Collins?
I don't think anybody does that.
Oh, please.
And you know why it's a Tom Collins.
I know.
It was the joke.
Listen to the episode. No, so continue.
I was going to say, I think that maybe it has something to do with safe sex, and also, you just want to, and, you know, like, I'm going out on a limb here, but you don't want to just stick your finger into a guy's butt.
Like, the balls are safer? But I would think mid-1990s, they would be more obsessed with sex being safe.
I mean, I've been reading Cosmo. Actually, that's not even true. I've stopped reading Cosmo, but I do still like I still like to make fun of it. The day I read the article, How to Touch a Naked Man, I was done.
That's, like, every...
I mean, like... anywhere, right? His penis, that's probably a good place to start.
All I know is, for the number of people who read Cosmo in this country, there are surprisingly few mattresses that actually get set on fire, given how often Cosmo gives advice on how to set the mattress on fire.
69 hot tips for sex.
Making fun of Cosmo is so hack, but...
It's so easy. They make it so easy.
Yeah, I know. I enjoyed it. You know, especially, I didn't know shit about girls. I still don't know shit about girls.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I started reading it in, like, sixth and seventh grade and thinking that it was just, like, this amazing trove of knowledge.
What's the next one going to be? What are they going to move on to after balls? Fingers up the ass, play with the balls. What's going to be next?
Nipples.
Biting the nipples. Yeah, it's going to be nipples. It's going to be all about nipples.
Nipple.
Bite those nipples hard.
I don't know.
All right. I'm going to go get some water. Hey, so we're back. How's Pina Colada treating you?
Good.
I killed mine off. Yeah, I got to get another one at the next break.
You really did.
Yeah. Hey, how's your new car treating you? Optimus.
My new car is wonderful. I like it a lot. I recently discovered how I can, and this is going to just make me sound horrible. I recently learned how to link Bluetooth from my iPod to my car and listen to my iPod in the car without the wires being connected. No wires at all. What the shit is that?
2006 is truly the future.
Magnets, man. How do they work?
So
I guess when I was cleaning out my old car, I found this first aid kit.
Mm-hmm.
The trunk of my old car?
Yeah, this was like, it was like a nice car. It had all sorts of weird bells and whistles lurking around waiting to be spelunked.
So this was a 1993 Lexus ES300, rest in peace, Reginald, that I inherited from my aunt. She sold it to me in sophomore year of college. And it was my first car that I actually owned, like my name was on the deed. Mm-hmm. It was really a nice luxury car back in the day, 1993. Leather interior. It was the last model that was made before they had CD players.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sunroof. I'm getting misty-eyed thinking about Reginald.
Yeah.
It was a really nice car, and it lasted 21
Yeah, that thing was a tank. That thing lasted
years,
forever.
Okay, so it was great. Anyway, the point is, when it did finally shed its mortal coil, I was cleaning it out before the junk people came to tow it away, and I found a first aid kit in the trunk that I had never realized was there. And I opened it up and saw that there was, like, some first aid stuff. I threw out all the perishable stuff. So the point is, there was this first aid kit from 1993 or 1992 in there. And I was looking through it recently because of my sunburn situation, looking for gauze that I could slather stuff on and wrap it up.
What do I do for the grayscale?
Yeah, pretty much. So the point is, I was just looking to see what we had before I went to CVS. And I found a first aid kit and the first aid manual from 1993.
And boy, is this a fun first aid manual.
I want to try and just... And the first thing is that I need to emphasize that it is a first aid manual with a lot of really weird things in it.
Yeah.
For just a basic first aid
kit. And
it
has, like, these weird stylized instructions of mannequins, but they're sort of half-stick figures, but they also have, like, a tennis headband on.
Yeah, well, one of the main characters, there's, like, three. There's the man, there's, like, a woman who is just kind of like a block, and then there's this, like, I guess he's supposed to be a
victim.
Teenager. Or a boy, and he's wearing...
He's the one who keeps getting injured, right?
It switches, but he's the one that's wearing, like, a John McEnroe, like, headband, mm-hmm. and his
really
shirt's
high
inside...
Socks,
yeah, and his shirt's inside his gym shorts, mm-hmm. and he's, like... Anyway, it's
like,
just...
Well, you know, people get in a lot of wrecks when they're on their way home from the gym, I think. Lexus was very concerned about that.
Yeah. Well, I just want to point out, so those are some of the weird things that's in here. So it goes through, all the way through, like, minor cuts
and bruises.
What
is the title of this book, by the way?
First Aid Guide.
As published by the National Safety Council.
So it goes through all sorts of things like insect bites, to minor cuts and bruises, to broken bones, to amputation,
yeah.
by the way.
Field amputation.
There is a page in here, and it's just about bleeding, like things that bleed and how you should take care of them. And it goes straight from, hey, figure out what the cause of the problem is, and then the next page... Amputations. It goes from top.
So what does it tell us about amputation? Because I'm actually, you know.
So, I just thought it was funny that it goes
did
from...
Did you just tell me about amputation? I want to know about amputation.
Control the bleeding.
Okay.
Recover
well, wait, what is this before you amputate? Because while I amputate, there's going to be a lot
of
bleeding.
I think this is after you amputate. It tells you...
Oh, is
that
this
you,
is like
it
if it's like a mangled...
It doesn't tell you how to amputate. What it does is it tells you what to do afterwards.
Oh,
so,
okay.
You know,
so they're
of,
pretty much figuring just hatchet.
You're just kind of fucked in the middle. So it says control the bleeding, mm-hmm. recover the amputated body part. Care for the amputated body part by following these
by
procedures.
Petting it gently and telling it everything will be all right.
So the best thing that you might notice about this is that it's a severely dated manual.
Mm-hmm.
It's also very strange.
How's it dated?
It is dated because one of the pages is about AIDS prevention and
mm-hmm.
excuse
well,
me, AIDS,
serious.
AIDS and hepatitis B prevention. But notice the following. Here's some facts about hepatitis B and AIDS. Hepatitis B virus causes serious liver disease and appears to be related to liver cancer. The virus is very infectious.
All of which is true.
AIDS is a universally fatal disease.
Universally fatal. That makes it sound like it kills people on other planets.
That cripples the immune system, leaving the victim susceptible to illnesses the body can usually fight off, such as pneumonia, meningitis, and a cancer called Kaposi's sarcoma. At present, there's no cure for AIDS.
Oh, that's still true.
And it also goes down to, use these precautions. All first aid kits should have several pairs of latex or vinyl gloves.
Mm-hmm.
Use these gloves in every situation involving blood or other bodily fluids. God help you if you gargle that blood, but if you touch it, it's mm-hmm. The gay is going to go straight into you.
I think this is good advice based on the limited set of... You know, it's 1993. It's not like 1983. The part that I found hilarious was there's a discussion of what happens when you come upon an accident victim who is eviscerated, unfortunately. Which, you know, I don't think there are fortunate eviscerations, I guess.
Fortunately, he was eviscerated.
Well, you know, if he died instantly and wanted to.
Oh, no. There's so much knowledge. I can't find it.
Also, this book is in green and white, and I think there was a conscious decision not to have any red in there.
Well, it's from the Green Crosses for Safety.
That's okay. A thing.
So it goes from, you know, like dental injuries to chest injuries to blisters. And then this is the section on abdominal injuries.
I'm not going to lie. You're making this book sound a lot more interesting the more you talk about it.
This is the section on abdominal injuries. For severe blow, it advises you that you place the victim on the side in a comfortable position and expect vomiting.
Mm-hmm.
Then
that's pretty much every day of my life.
For penetrating injuries, it goes straight to... protruding organs and how to deal with them.
Oh, thank God. At last.
If any of the abdominal organs mm-hmm. lie outside the
abdominal
cavity.
I gotta get a pencil. Hold on. Okay. Any organs
outside the abdominal cavity, do not try to reinsert them inside the abdomen.
Wow. What if they ask really nice?
Don't do it. God help you.
What if it's like, man, I do not want my colon outside of my body anymore.
And the best part about it, and this is probably a visual joke, so we should probably take a picture of this and put it in show notes, is the illustration.
Yeah, there's a drawing of, you know, and it's like a don't do this, and it's like got a guy with his intestines hanging out and somebody shoving the intestines back in. It's like, do this, and it's like, just leave the intestines out.
It's captioned, protruding organs, do not replace them, cover them with a moist, sterile dressing.
Yeah, I'm thinking like Green Goddess, Thousand Island, Peppercorn Ranch.
So that's the story. But
yeah, that was our afternoon. And I did a spit take at the picture.
He like across the room.
I'm not sure it works on radio, but it was very funny.
So don't put organs back in. God
help
you.
The lesson we have learned is don't stick organs back in. Mm-hmm. AIDS is always fatal.
Yep.
Amputation really doesn't matter how you amputate.
But you should probably get the body part wrapped
wanna,
up in ice. As
you
want to
get it wrapped
possible.
Up. Yeah. So that's good advice.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lexis. Beautiful.
I did not.
All right, so we're back. This is Prefer Not To. Still having pina coladas.
Yep.
Second round, actually.
Yep.
So have you seen these car commercials? I have to... So in this household, we've cut the cord quite a while ago. So we didn't actually have a lot of cable TV, and we don't watch a lot of live TV. We watch a lot of stuff on the Netflix and on the Hulu and such. But I recently got our tuner fixed up again so we can watch live TV, live network TV and such. And there's this trend in commercials that is driving me insane. So for the longest time, right... The trick that they would try to do to get you to watch commercials after the show was over was that they would use like a lot of compression and the volume would be really high on the commercials. So like when you were watching, and you'd like look up and what you were at the commercial. So now, but that's been regulated by law that you can't be more than X and such decibels more than the surrounding programming.
Really?
Yeah. FCC ruled on that about a year and a half ago. And TVs have settings now that you can have it normalize the volume. So... They've got this new thing that they're doing, and I've seen it in four or five different commercials, and this is not like some sort of brain tumor that I have, but they will stick in the background, like not quiet, but sort of covered up by other noises, a car horn sound.
Do you have any examples?
I'll find some. But it's, they'll be talking to me like, remember to come to the food line, was you, and it's, you'll just, and it's designed, it's preying on the fact that we are trained to notice car horns, because, you know, it's a signal that something deadly is occurring, and they're using this very useful training that indicates that something deadly is occurring to get us to look up and see their, you know, 0% APR for 12 months financing on the fucking sofa.
I'm going to have to take your word for it, because I do not, I haven't.
You haven't really, it's maddening. It's, because I will be, I have my computer right here, and the TV is over on the other side of the room, and I'll be typing, and I just, you know, I like to have the TV on, a little white noise, you know, a little local news, whatever, and they'll get to the commercial, and I'll just be, and I will think that there is a car bearing down on me, you know, and I am already an anxious person.
Yeah.
So, you know. Firing off a car horn noise around, there better be a fucking car threatening my life.
I don't know what you're talking about. One thing that's always bothered me is when songs on the radio use sirens in the background.
Yeah.
Like just
kind of... You listen to a lot of like hip hop and stuff, so they got a lot of sirens in those.
Well...
And like helicopters.
What? Helicopters isn't the problem, because if there's a helicopter, it's probably not behind me. If I hear an alarm, a siren, I think, oh, there's either an ambulance.
You clearly
that
didn't
I
grow up in Compton like I did.
And you always throw me. Oh my god! But the point is just like I feel like it's very irresponsible and like kind of unsafe to have this in songs, because people are trained to react to car alarms, whether it's a siren or an ambulance or something like that. Like one song I can think of.
You mean like a car siren, not like a car alarm?
No, I meant like a siren.
Because there's not a human being alive who hears a car alarm and thinks, "Hey, there's a car getting stolen."
Well, true, but I'm saying like in a song they'll have like a slight effect, and I always feel like that's
Literally there is any other sound in the world would be more effective at indicating that my car is being stolen than a car alarm. Because car alarm, the last thing anybody thinks when they hear a car alarm is that a car is being stolen.
Well, these days, that's what's wonderful.
It's been that way for 15 years.
Why don't we go into car stealing?
Ooh. I mean, we would never do that.
No.
That is unconscionable.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're probably similar.
Anyhow, it's driving me crazy. Let's see, what else do I have here on the list?
It's time for... Screen time.
Don't you mean scream time?
I'm trying to rein that in. I don't want that to become one of the things that we have to say on every podcast.
I can't believe you got me to do it. I do. That's a pretty good crypt keeper, isn't it?
Hey, Josh, can you answer a question for me? Does that mean yes?
Yeah.
Do you know how to scare-a-lel park?
Of course, you have to burn your steering feel. I don't know.
You could have just said, of corpse, I do.
Oh, that would have been good. I'm not good at it.
If anybody out there was unaware,
I suck at Crypt
One,
Keeper.
Kate loves Halloween, and two, Kate loves Tales from the Crypt and Crypt Keeper puns. I think the best one I've ever heard was Scarolel Park, but...
It doesn't even make any sense.
Yes, it does. And at the time, he was dressed as a chauffeur inside a car.
And, yes.
You know, because he does his little outfit.
Always make sure to use your burn signal.
Yeah, well, it had something to do with... That particular episode had something to do with cards. Cars, mm-hmm. Not cards. The one with cards and Lance Henriksen is also really funny, but...
You're still thinking of him, aren't you?
I'm trying not to. Have you seen the...
The Halloween stuff in the Harris Theater? Yes.
No. Have you seen... You don't watch Tales from the Crypt, though.
I've seen 4 or 5 of them.
Have you seen the one with John Rhys-Davies... The dad from Dexter, that guy, you know, you would know who I'm talking about, and Whoopi Goldberg.
You've discussed this one 5 or 6 times. It's like legendary for you.
I just remember it being kind of gross.
What does it involve again?
Stomach being burst open and people searching through the guts for a diamond that they need.
A diamond?
Oh, my God. All right, well.
Was it a blood diamond? You see, I did 2 there.
That was fright a pun you did, Josh. I can do this all night. I can do this all night.
Don't you mean all fright?
I just did a fright pun. You can't do fright if I just did a fright pun. You should have said, like, all nightmare. I don't even, like...
That doesn't even make any sense.
It doesn't have to make sense. It just has to... Well, look, it's a subtle art, and maybe you'll get it, and maybe you won't.
I bet you're going to get it. Oh. Teach me, please.
You just have to watch a shit ton of Tales from the Crypt is what you have to
do. I haven't read Proust. Hey, what do you think about Ben Affleck being Batman? Internet is crazy.
I think we talked about this.
Did we? No, did we? About internet hating that Ben Affleck was going to be Batman? You know, I was talking about my perfect Batman was James Spader, and then he got cast in the next Avengers movie.
When you say your best Batman, you mean the best Bruce Wayne,
like,
right?
My ideal Bruce Wayne is circa 1989 James Spader.
I agree with that. That's pretty good. Interesting.
Yeah. I think that's...
See, I actually like Christian Bale as Bruce Wayne. Maybe not so much as Batman, but as Bruce Wayne. Mm-hmm. He's got the...
Or circa 1983 William Hurt, like Altered States era William Hurt.
Sorry, every time you say William Hurt, I just start thinking about Body Heat. So I think that I've always been, like, I think a thing that a lot of people miss out on when it comes to Batman casting is that they have to be a convincing Bruce Wayne.
Right.
As this guy that no
Anybody
one would suspect.
Anybody can be a pair of rebel nipples.
Yeah, no one would suspect Bruce Wayne of being, like, a do-gooder because he's, like, a brat and...
And a dick.
And a dick and very...
And rich.
And he's always had things given to him. Obviously, everybody else knows about, you know, the dark side and, like, his parents being shot in front of him or whatever, but people don't necessarily always cast for Bruce Wayne.
Right.
Which is why I think that James Spader would be really good, would have been a good choice.
Mm-hmm. Back
Michael,
15 years ago. Yeah, now he's kind of bloaty. Like, Val Kilmer's all bloaty now.
Well, yeah, but Michael Keaton was a wonderful Batman. Mm-hmm. His Bruce Wayne was a little more like posh
goofy
nerd, like who doesn't know how to talk to girls, which I also thought was so cute, but I've...
Yeah, you know, my big beef with the Michael Keaton Batman is when he was like scratching a CD in the Batman Returns, where he's like, but it was on a CD, and it pissed me off, because you can't do that with a CD. And also, Batman wouldn't do that.
Bat dance.
Yeah, but that's Prince.
I know, I'm just saying, I like it a lot.
Oh, okay, I was talking about things that I have problems with.
Oh. Well, the whole, have we talked about this before? The whole second act
The third act of Batman Returns
sense. It's just kind of, I mean, it's wacky, but it's wacky in that way that you remind that Tim Burton doesn't know how to plot a movie.
Yeah, it's...
And I don't think he wrote the script, but it was clearly like...
Well, but we had this discussion before that writing is not everything. You know, pacing and editing determine how a story...
But we've
works.
Also talked about how Tim Burton can't write a script to save his life.
I think Mars Attacks, but I'm not going to claim it makes sense.
I thought that movie was a comedy the first time
it is.
I know, but the first time I watched it, I convinced my mom that it was a comedy. Mm-hmm. And I watched it when I was like 7, and I thought it was like a really, really scary, disturbing movie. Think about it.
Because everybody's getting vaporized all over the place.
Yeah, and Jessica fucking Parker's head is on a dog and, on a person.
No, Sarah Jessica Parker's head goes on a dog, right? And then Pierce Brosnan's head's on the other dog, right?
Yeah, and then their heads fall off, and there's... Jack Nicholson gets that weird worm thing through him, and there's aliens running. There's the time where the alien dresses up like a lady and goes to the White House and makes out with, and I think it's Dana Carvey, seduces him and then bites his...
Martin Short.
Oh, it's Martin Short. One of them.
One of those rubber-faced funny men.
And he bites off his, like, tongue, and it was just very, very, I mean, like, I'm going to be... I was just that's scary.
That movie may end up on screen time, you realize.
Speaking of screen time.
Okay, so this week on screen time, what were our movies? What was our year? It was one. We rolled the number one. Mm-hmm. So to remind those of you how we do this, every week Kate and I pick a number randomly between 1 and 25, add that year to the number of the year of our birth, and look at the number one movie in America that week. Last week we rolled one, and the movies that were chosen for us were, Kate?
For Josh, it was The Longest Yard, mm-hmm. the original, starring Burt Reynolds,
mm-hmm.
looking luscious, no, and
very hairy,
very, very something, I'll say that, and my movie was the unfortunate, very unfortunate, Uncle Buck.
You know, I have a lot of friends who love Uncle Buck.
Well, I would challenge them to, what the hell, what did they see?
Okay, who wants to go, you want to do Uncle Buck first, or you want to do Longest Yard first?
I think we can probably wrap up Uncle Buck pretty quickly, because it was not really a movie that I felt made a lot
okay.
of sense.
Okay, so do you want to go, or you want me to go? You can go.
The plot of Uncle Buck revolves around the fact that there is this suburban family in...
Chicago.
In Chicago, someone in the suburbs. The suburbs.
It's a John Hughes picture, so it all takes place in Chicago.
It's about a family in the suburbs of Chicago. They've recently moved there. There's an older, surly teenage daughter, and then there's two younger kids, one of whom is played by Macaulay Culkin. I'm not sure if the younger kids are supposed to be twins. They're a little nebulous on that because they, like, sleep in the same room, and they dress similarly. And anyway, the point is that the mom's father has a heart attack back in Indianapolis, I think, and they have to go see him, and they don't want to take the kids with them, but there's no one to watch the kids while they're gone. So they hire, or ask rather, Uncle Buck, who is the dad's brother, to come and stay with the kids for a week or a couple of days.
An indeterminate amount of time.
And he agrees. Uncle Buck is played by John Candy. And let's see.
Sort of a ne'er-do-well rapscallion. He gambles a lot. He doesn't have a fixed job. He has this girlfriend played by Amy Madigan who's trying to get him to tie him down into a regular job.
Yeah, he won't make a commitment. And he drives this hilariously broken down old car that every time it stops and he parks it, it makes this like gunshot sound when the engine backfires. This movie had it's trying to be like a family friendly like romp for all ages and a lighthearted comedy, but it has a lot of tone issues.
Yeah, you know, we say this a lot when we come to comedies, but it really is true. Tone is so important on comedy. You have to have a consistent tone because you know comedy builds, and if you break the tone, it's hard to, you know, so much of comedy is what you anticipate happening and how what happens differs from what you anticipate happening. And if you're breaking tone, it's like breaking a covenant with the audience about what to expect and what not to expect.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a weird fish out of water in the sense that he hasn't seen these kids in quite some time, mm-hmm. and he can't remember like the younger two's names for a mm-hmm. while in that sense. And he's like crude and crass and like gives them like, you know, grits with like onions in them instead of cereal the first morning, and you're like, okay. But then it goes into these really weird tangents where the oldest daughter is the main character. The other two kids are kind of inconsequential, honestly. They're just there to be cute and make funny one-liners.
And they're really cute.
Like, it's Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah. And Gabby Hoffman, who had a streak of movies in the 90s where she was super cute.
I was going to say, like, 92 or 93, whenever this was made. No, it's like 89.
89.
Right. Yeah. So it's prime Macaulay Culkin years. But the oldest daughter is your typical, she's trying to go, it's like a mix between Molly Ringwald's character, fashion-wise, in The Breakfast Club, and then Ally Sheenie's character in The Breakfast
Sheenie?
Club. What is it?
Sheedy.
Sheedy, whatever. I've seen that movie, like, once.
Really?
Yeah. Anyway, the point is that she's kind of a mix of those, where she's very surly, but she, like, wants, she's, like, pseudo-goth, but she hates her family, and told her mom, and they ruined her life, and all this stuff, and she's just the worst character mm-hmm. ever. And I guess most of the movie revolves around Uncle Buck's conflict between her, like she wants to go out and see her boyfriend, he doesn't want her to see her boyfriend, and he, like, this is what I'm telling you, like, it's such a mismatched yeah. movie, and it's just events to events that make almost no sense until all of a sudden they learn a lesson at the very end that comes out of nowhere.
What was the lesson? I didn't even get that.
Well, the lesson is that homegirl Millie or Maxie or whatever her name was loves her mom now and isn't a bitch anymore.
Yeah, that didn't. Yeah, so, yeah. This movie was trying to be, I think, and it's hard with John Hughes, because I think it was trying to be a sort of slice of, because John Hughes has that sort of slice of lifey, I know how kids live, you know, sort of very atmospheric sense of of direction. And it was trying to sort of be that, like, John Candy's character would have been a sort of ne'er-do-well. The movie that it reminded me of that did this successfully, and this is what we talked about, was School of Rock, where Jack Black's character was sort of like a guy who shouldn't really be around kids. And it was Richard Linklater who was, you know, inspired by a lot of the same sort of 70s movies that I think John Hughes was inspired by. But, you know, sort of pushing a little bit of the boundaries between adult and child. And but that movie, unlike this one, was sort of very tonally consistent in that, you know, it was that kind of feel through the whole movie. Whereas this, it would have that feel, and it would have sort of, you know, little gentle scenes between John Candy and one or two of the children. But then it would also have, like, their neighbor played by Laurie Metcalf, who is some sort of oversexed housewife who's looking to capture John Candy for some reason. Or a lot of, like, weird slapstick with soundboard sound effects, like boing and whoop, whoop, whoop.
Yeah, there's a scene where he trips over a carpet, or no, his girlfriend, like, it's like a revolving door, and she hits him in the door, and he goes wah 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 and falls back in slow mo,
right,
like onto the dining room table, complete with the, like,
right. So there's that, and then there's wah, like some wah, wah. Then there's a lot of stuff that is just sort of entirely inappropriate in a movie that you would have kids at all. There's a drunk clown who talks about having great dildo jokes, and, you know, John Candy talks about cutting off this girl's boyfriend's legs with his hatchet.
the cut, yeah. It goes from, like, wise, like, cute little moments, like where John Candy makes, like, these giant pancakes for Macaulay Culkin's character's birthday. Like, you know, a huge stack of pancakes. And it's like, oh, Uncle Buck's up to his shenanigans, which would be charming in a different movie if that's what it consistently was.
Right. If it was going to be this sort of gentle, humane comedy.
And then it goes to stuff where he's, like, halfway slut-shaming this girl for wanting to kiss a boy.
Kissing, by the way.
And also these weird things where he threatens violence. There's a scene where he gets, like, a driver, like a wooden driver, out of his car.
Where he kidnaps the boy that the girl was interested in, throws him in the trunk of his car, duct tapes his mouth shut, tapes his hands together, drives him across town, lets him loose in a park, and then fires golf balls at him.
When the teenager is like, fuck you, man, I'll fuck you up, as they're driving away, John Candy, being a man, apparently, of 40 or something, stops, gets out of the car, and starts whacking golf balls at this, like, 16-year-old piece of shit. And yeah, he's a 16-year-old piece of shit, but, like...
But that's what being a 16-year-old boy is.
And there's just so much to this movie that just doesn't really make sense tonally. Yeah. There's the teenage daughter is, like, his main adversary.
And she's just a horrible person.
And she's just a terrible,
like,
person.
Like, she lies, like, just outright lies to fuck him up.
Yeah.
With his sort of fiancé.
His girlfriend calls to talk to him, and she's like, oh, no, he's not here. He's at the slutty lady's house having sex.
Having slutty sex slut. And then there's the whole stupid farcical element where the Amy Madigan character walks in and Laurie Metcalf and John Candy are dancing. And it's instantly the, I am not going to listen to any explanation you have. I am going to walk out completely angry for plot purposes.
The thing about this movie that bothered me the most was that it is an hour and 30 minutes, which I looked it up and I was like, after 10 Cup last week, I was like, oh good, it's going to be brisk. It felt like really long. The first 30 minutes... Mm-hmm. Went by fairly quickly, and then the rest of the hour, there's, like, all these unnecessary scenes of John Candy strutting. There's one where he's walking down the hall of an elementary school with a cigar in his mouth and sunglasses.
Dark sunglasses. Yeah.
And a nice guy's OK Cupid hat to, what was it, Wild Thing?
Wild Thing, yeah.
And he's like, and there's this funny little scene where he's trying to, like, I don't know. And then there's the scene where he makes fun of the assistant principal, and, like, he looks at her and she has a very prominent mole on her chin. Mm-hmm. And all he can say is, like, tumor, mole, wart,
right,
mole,
like,
tumor.
It's entirely unbelievable that, yeah. And we haven't set up that this guy has sort of a Tourette's type thing. So it doesn't, you know, and I feel like I'm beating up a little bit because there were some things in this movie that I liked when it went really sort of gentle and human nature comedy. Some of it was really funny. Like, you know, I laughed when he had to try and use the kids' urinals. I laughed when he brought the cat in, and then the kids were like, we don't have a cat, and then he threw the cat out. I thought that was funny, but again, those are sort of isolated moments that tonally don't match a movie where there's a drunk clown talking about his dildo jokes.
And there's a scene with John Candy where he, like, knocks over some plates that are apparently by accident, and he's like, oh shit. And then later he's talking to the mom.
First of all, it doesn't break, and he's like, oh, it's unbreakable. He tits it on the counter and it breaks. That's good comedy.
Yeah, and there's a later scene where he's talking to the mom who's checking on her children, and he's like, so those are some cool plates you had downstairs.
where would I get one of those?
Where'd you get those? Can you talk to him about me? Were they expensive? Like, There's some parts of it that are funny, and it seems like...
Make that movie.
Yeah, make
that. That movie doesn't have any wacky sound effects in it.
I could have seen it being like a Mr. Mom kind of movie. Like, right. This boorish guy is forced to be right. Like the guardian right. Of these right. three exactly. children.
A Mr. Mom or a...
Even a Mrs. Doubtfire. Like, Jesus.
Well, right. Or like I said, School of Rock. Like something where it was grounded in character. Because, you know, I was interested in this guy. You know, this sort of, you know, not an unfamiliar person to me. 40-something unemployable ne'er-do-well.
That's John Candy.
Right. So, could have been better. Late John Hughes did better. Go watch The Breakfast Club instead of watching this.
Yeah, I would not recommend this movie at all.
So my movie, 1974 is The Longest Yard, remade in 2005 with Adam Sandler and a bunch of people.
Adam Sandler and Chris Rock and Nelly and Burt Reynolds.
And Burt Reynolds, right. So, brief story. Burt Reynolds is a washed-up football player who takes his girlfriend's car for joyride, ends up in prison. Prison warden run by Eddie Albert, as is customary among prison wardens, apparently, has some sort of football league scheme where he wants the Burt Reynolds to run a football team for him.
It's a league of inter-prison guard teams. And then later he's talking about it to the warden. The warden comes up with the idea for him to have a special game of guards versus the inmates. And puts him in charge of the inmates.
Right. And basically, you know, it's a 70s anti-hero movie where the prisoners just want to get back at the racist cop prison guards by punching them in the face. Richard Kiel is in it, who you may know as Jaws.
Looking really disturbingly like Michael Shannon. Right.
And he has the funniest part in the movie that everybody remembers, which is, I think I broke his fucking neck, and they say it like 5 times. And so they have the big... Oh, also, Burt Reynolds has a history of point shaving, so Eddie Albert tries to get him to sort of throw the game, and then he agrees to if the, he promises to let the prisoners off, you know, without getting beat up, and then Eddie Albert... reneges on his deal for some reason that I'm not sure why, I guess, just to show him who's boss.
Yeah, well, that's his whole point. Like, why did he have to have a game of convicts versus guards anyway?
Right, because he's like a power mad maniac. Right. So,
sir, I'm afraid you've gone mad with power. Of course I have. You tried going mad without power? It's no fun.
It's no fun. So, and then Burt Reynolds realizes almost too late that Eddie Albert isn't going to agree to his deal, so they battle back and then win the football game in shenanigan style.
With one point.
Yeah. After running it in from the 1-yard line, the longest yard.
Was that the longest yard, Josh?
Or is the prison yard the longest yard? It has two meanings.
Yeah.
So, it's been a long time since I saw this. It's a Robert Aldridge picture, which if you guys saw the Dirty Dozen, there's a reason why structurally they're essentially the same movie, which is a ragtag bunch of guys coming together to accomplish mission in the face of organizational frustration as well as their own foibles. I enjoy it just because I like things about from the 70s where, you know, it's not clear heroes and clear villains, and where playing dirty is sort of valued, and anti-heroes actually are anti-heroes as opposed to actual heroes like they try to make them in movies today. I enjoy it. I mean, there's some really problematic elements, especially at the beginning when Burt Reynolds just beats up his girlfriend.
Yeah.
You'd never see a movie. Like, and in fact, we talked about how when they remade it, they completely changed that so that he just locked his girlfriend in a closet. You know, a hero doesn't come back from beating up his girlfriend in movies today. So, well, yeah, but that's only in real life. I'm looking at you, Chris Brown.
So, I did not care for this movie very much.
What did you not like?
The women beating,
yeah,
first of all.
Yeah, that's, I agree, that's problematic.
The blaxploitation, like, jive culture of how all of the black prisoners are like, man, Negro, daddy, you a fool. Like, you know, that's how they talk, and it's obviously someone who is just playing on, like, the 1970s blaxploitation. All of the cops, it takes place in the South, so all of the cops are extra racist, and they refer to all of the prisoners, boy.
Well, that is a standard 70s movie trope of racist cops. It's like, you know, Macon County Line, this movie, Cool Hand Luke, Deliverance. It's the whole sort of, everything in the set. There's a whole spate of movies in the 1970s where, like, you saw A Time to Kill, right? The Joel Schumacher movie where everyone was just drenched in sweat. That was like a whole genre of movies in the 70s about how, like, you city boys best not come down to the, like, Walking Tall, shit like that.
I know. I'm just saying that it adds to the corniness of the picture in general. There's also a mentally ill patient.
Yeah.
That patient, a mentally ill convict that he recruits for his football team, and just, it patronizes him. Like, he'll be like...
It is essentially Simple Jack from
Tropic
Thunder.
Yeah, he's like, what do I do, boss? And then, like...
In fact, I would be really surprised if, in fact, that wasn't where they got Simple Jack, because it is so much like, you make me happy.
That's how he talks, and he's like... what should I do, boss? And Burt Reynolds is like, go get him, Jimmy. And then he laughs about it. Like, it's funny.
Yeah.
And, you know.
It is an artifact of its time.
But you know what? So is Birth of a Nation, and I would not recommend that to anybody.
Are you kidding? It's a masterpiece.
I would not say, hey, you should totally watch this. I would just acknowledge the fact that it...
You would say, don't go see Birth of a Nation?
Not without the caveat that it is a hugely problematic film.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's like a landmark in narrative cinema.
And then we gotta talk about this. I'm sorry. This movie takes a very, very dark turn about halfway through. Actually, less, because the football game, the climatic football game...
That's one of the things I like. It's very 70s.
The climatic football game at the end literally takes 47 minutes to play out. It's not like a montage. It's like, it's half of the movie. It's just this fucking football game at the end. And so the rest of the exposition takes place between about 20 minutes and 45 minutes in. And then there's this random scene where a guy gets burned alive in his cell. I'm watching, I'm like, well, this movie took a dark turn. Yeah. And then there's like, it just seemed very formulaic and obvious to me. Like, there's a scene where Burt Reynolds is talking to the guy who gets burned alive in his cell later. They're drinking some prison wine out of the toilet. And they're like, man, Burt, whatever his actual name was, what was it, like, Cook or Crick or...
Crew.
Crew. Like, man, Crew, you ain't scared of nothing. And he's like, I am scared.
Except fire.
He's like, I am scared of some things. I worry about my father. And there's like a harmonica playing in the background. Which is like some Home on the Range. There's also, whenever I'm at this, there's like drag queens who are the performers at the
that was
game,
very random and strange.
Which is just like, what? I don't know. I felt like it was, there's a lot of elements in it that were kind of deplorable, just in terms of the general racism and sexism and women beating and boy, like, I literally started counting how
many
times.
They're the bad guys. You want bad guys to be nice?
No, that's not it at all. But you can be a bad guy without saying boy at the end of every single sentence. That one cop, every single sentence ended in boy if he was talking to any of the prisoners.
Yes. Okay. I like this kind of 70s movie that doesn't hew to the sort of 80s triumphalist formula where, you know, just making it through the day is a victory. And that's what I like. You know, it's the same thing as like Bad News Bears and stuff like that. Movies from the 70s where it was very sort of not 80s triumphalism.
One thing I did like about this is Bernadette Peters' performance as the warden secretary, because she is a sex positive, crazy, sexy, awesome, manipulative lady.
Yes, she was, and very, very cute.
And very cute. Another thing I did not like about this movie, all the southern accents. Well, Bernadette Peters was putting it on hard.
No, she's not a subtle performer, Kate.
She's a wonderful performer.
I didn't say that she wasn't wonderful.
Have you seen Into the Woods? She's wonderful.
No, I've never seen Into the Woods, Kate. I'm not the person who brought Into the Woods into your fucking life.
Stop getting mad because I didn't like your movie.
It's okay. Is this the first time we've disagreed on a movie?
It's not that we disagree. I just don't think, I find that it's just so obviously, blatantly 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It's disconcerting and being like, Jesus, is this what people considered like
But you
good?
Drive around with your radio glued to the 80s channel.
Yeah, but if I watched a movie from the 80s that involved racism and sexism and a woman being thrown into the
wall.
The
bad guys were racist.
I'm talking about the depiction of black people themselves. They're very like, we don't talk to no honkies. Like, I mean, like, every single line was like, it could have been from Shaft or, like, Blackula.
You know, people occasionally did use the word honky.
I know. The plot also relies around the fact that the prisoners have to recruit the black athlete,
Right, because they would lose without the black athletes.
But they don't treat it like, hey, you're a valuable member of society, come help me do this. So they treat it as, hey man, come over here and we'll
they
beat up
some
guys.
They don't treat any of these people like they're valuable members of society. The whole reason that anyone is on this team is to beat up guards.
But that's my point. That's why they treat Simple Jack so poorly. That's why the guy gets caught on fire. And
okay, so those are our movies for the week. Longest Yard, 1974. I give a thumbs up to, Kate gives a thumbs down to, and we both give thumbs down to Uncle Buck, 1989.
I will say that Burt Reynolds is very dreamy in this movie.
He does have some dimples going
despite
on.
Despite the fact that he threw a woman into a wall because she wanted to have sex with him.
That is true. Okay, gonna pause now while we look for what our movies are for next time.
Ooh, I can't wait.
Okay, so the random number generator has given us the number 3.
3.
Lucky 3. So which for me? Second week of September, 1976. The John Wayne vehicle, The Shootist, featuring a very late in life. I believe this is his final feature, John Wayne.
Is it? Have you seen it before? Mm-hmm. Like, is it a sad final feature?
It is. And it has, it's great. It's a great movie. It's it's about a gunfighter in his dying days. It has little Ronnie Howard.
Oh, Opie.
Yeah. I mean, he's like a teenager in it.
Well, Opie.
But he's the little kid who wants to be a gunfighter.
He'll always be Opie to me.
So mine is The Shootist. It's a great movie. And yours is Dead Again, which we've been talking about recently. The Kenneth Branagh vehicle that he made with his then wife, Emma Thompson. His Hitchcock homage. And it's very Hitchcocky. You'll like it. I really do think you'll like it.
I do like Kenneth Branagh just because he's so...
Oh, and it has Derek Jacobi.
The Master?
Well, yeah, in that one episode.
Right? He played the Master? Yeah, that guy?
He's also I, Claudius and a lot of other things.
You know, I'm sorry. I was looking at recipes for drinks and I found one called, it's like a screwdriver, but it's called a sonic screwdriver.
Oh, fuck you.
And it's blue.
All right. We'll be back with our recommendations and some housekeeping when we get back. Okay, we're back. This is the part of the show where we do a little housekeeping and do some recommendations. First, a little housekeeping. First, I want to extend our worries and concerns to our friend of the show, big fan Dania, who had a minor house fire and was left out of her house for several days. Hope everything's going well, so extend your thoughts there. And as usual, we welcome your feedback. Please, I know I say this every week, but I really want some reviews on iTunes. You can reach us at pntcast@gmail.com on the email. We have a Tumblr, which is pntcast.tumblr.com. Our main webpage is pntcast.wordpress.com. So you have no excuse. Contact us. Tell us something. You know, what's your favorite color of cat? That's my question this week. So I don't know. I guess Tordy.
I'm a favorite. I'm a fan of Tuxedo, honestly.
Well, there you go. So now we're going to move on to recommendations. Kate, you want to go first?
Sure. This week I'm going to recommend a comic book. It's called Why? The Last Man. It's a comic book that starts off suddenly, well, no one knows why, but every man on the planet and every male animal dies all at the same time. With a horrible, apoplectic kind of Ebola, like just bleeding out of orifices kind of disease. Except for one man and his pet monkey.
Zardoz all of a sudden?
No, but there's women still alive. It's just this one man in the DC area and his pet monkey are the only ones alive.
Monkey.
And it's good, it's sci-fi, it's one of those like, oh, what if, you know, what would you do?
Mm-hmm. I've not read this, so I'm just...
It's several volumes long at this point. I like it. I think other people would like it. There you go.
So Kate's recommendation is Why? My recommendation, Why the Last Man? That's the letter Y.
Yeah, like chromosomes.
Got it. So my recommendation is building on the fact that next week we are going to be watching The Shootist. So I'm going to recommend in the meantime that you watch the John Ford classic Man Who Shot Liberty Valance with many of the same people who we end up watching in The Shootist. John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart, also Vera Miles is the lady, John Carradine in a really weird little minor role. It's an interesting movie. It's a sort of broad strokes iconographic look at the end of the West and themes like the bringing of law and lawlessness. And I like it very much. The performances are all wonderful. If you've ever wondered why anyone who does an impression of John Wayne uses the word pilgrim all the time, it's because of his performance in this movie. Interestingly enough, after a decade of working mostly in Technicolor, whereas movies in the 50s like The Searchers were these big CinemaScope color productions, this is a movie from 1962, but he went back to black and white. And I think there are thematic reasons why he made this movie in black and white rather than in color. So that's my recommendation. 1962's The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. Kate's recommendation is Why the Last Man. Mm-hmm. So, did you enjoy our drinks this week?
I did.
All right. So, we look forward to spending some time with you next week. What are we going to drink next week? I don't even know.
We're kind of broke. We'll figure it out.
All right. So, for Kate, I'm Josh.
For Josh, I am Kate.
And we look forward to spending some time with you next week.
Thank you for listening.